Welcome to Lancashire Fire and Rescue Service's first podcast series, Out of the Ashes, Stories from Lancashire. You may not associate Lancashire Fire and Rescue Service with medical emergencies, but we often collaborate with other organisations to help improve services to the public. We are currently running a trial involving non-operational staff volunteering as community first responders, supporting North West Ambulance Service. Volunteers respond to life-threatening emergencies in their communities from the workplace and administer first aid in the initial vital minutes before the North West Ambulance Service colleagues arrive. The partnership aims to save lives in Lancashire's communities. In today's episode, we'll be talking to Diane Fenton, a woman whose heart stopped beating and Lancashire Fire and Rescue Service's first community responder, Andy Dow, who you work along with North West Ambulance crew, saved Diane's life. Diane, how are you today?
Good, thank you.
Thank you very much for taking the time. The same to you, Andy. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm good today. Thanks.
So, shall we start the conversation off with what you remember from the day, Diane?
I had the grandchildren over for the week. Got up in the morning, did whatever we normally would do. Took the children back to Halifax. I drove, dropped the children off. It's an hour and probably about an hour and 15 minutes drive. Got back onto the bypass, decided I wanted a brew. Went to McDonald's drive-through, got a brew. Went to the next forecourt, got fuel, got back on the bypass. And that is the last thing that I remember until waking up in hospital.
Right. So did you make it safely home?
Apparently so.
But you have no memory whatsoever?
None whatsoever.
No. So let's go to Andy.
Yep.
What do you remember from when you first arrived to Diane's house?
So I was at work, just finishing off my daily tasks. I was doing some admin, sat in my office. The app went off for the ambulance service, which we have on the phone, and it said that there was a female collapsed unresponsive at home address, which was just up the road, literally from the fire station. So probably a minute and 10 seconds it was to the home address. They rang me on the way to the job to say it's still a priority one emergency. So they were leaving me on the job and to give them any update when I arrived on scene. So as I got in the front door of the property, Diane's husband had just started to do compressions on her, which was a good indication to me that, you know, things were a little bit more severe than just collapse, unresponsive. So at that point, I got my defibrillator out the bag, did a quick scene assessment, and then put the defibrillator on to Diane, which then analysed her. And literally, probably 30 seconds later, it had said there was a shock advised, which means that her heart was in a rhythm that was shockable. And I was able to deliver a shot with the defibrillator. So that was probably 4 minutes in from the 999 call being made that we were able to get a shock in and started then doing compressions and carrying on at scene, really.
So do you remember anything about the day, Diane? Do you remember starting to feel unwell in the car?
Nope.
Or was there no...
No.
No.
Like I say, I got on the bypass, didn't feel unwell, never had a headache, nothing. And the last thing I remember is, like I say, is getting on that bypass. Don't remember coming off the bypass. Don't remember getting on the motorway. So I've obviously driven home for an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Whether I was unwell there, I don't know.
Don't know. Does your husband describe, can he remember how you were on that day when you got home? Did he see any differences?
Yeah, he said when I came in, I just kept saying to him I was feeling unwell. I'd got a pain in my neck.
Yeah.
He said I went upstairs to rest. He came up to bring me a drink and he said I'd lost all colour at that point. He sat me up. And then he said I'd got pain at that point, then shooting down this side of the arm. He knew, obviously, something was completely wrong. Mm. Got me downstairs, and then once I was downstairs was when I collapsed, apparently.
It was quite a quick...
Very, very quick from me getting home, yes.
Yeah. So if I just give a little bit of background so the listeners understand, Diane went into cardiac arrest at home in Leyland back in January of this year, and her husband was the one that made the 999 call and started to give chest compressions. Andy is our community fire safety officer based at Leyland and was first to arrive, followed by the paramedics. So, it was a very quick situation from getting home to feeling unwell to Andy arriving at the scene.
Yeah.
And I think I remember asking him, was there anything that had led up to the incident? And he just said pretty much what he said there, that you were complaining that your shoulder was sore and then you just collapsed. And there was no previous medical history that we knew of. There was no previous heart-related incidents or anything like that.
Never so, real.
Yeah, so it was dead out.
Very out of the usual. So yeah, your husband knew straight away that something was wrong there.
Well, yeah, because it's very, very rare that I'm ill.
Andy, when you were there, were you speaking to Diane's husband? Were you helping along?
It's a bit of an alien process for people that are outside, the medical world. They don't see it often. So, I explained what I needed to do, where I needed to put the pads. So we got on and just did that. Your son was present and he was very worried as well. So, tried to calm him down a little bit. In fact, I think I asked him to look out for the ambulance crew and guide them in. The dogs were knocking about as well, so we made sure that they weren't going to run out the front door if others were coming in, because, it's all about the whole scene, really, and making sure that we can get everything as safe as possible. So, I mean, the priority was just to get that defibrillator on, see if we could get a shock from the unit, and obviously carry on with doing compressions, because, again, if your husband's not had any exposure to doing anything like that before, it's about getting quality CPR onto somebody as quickly as possible. And we know that doing that, the outcomes are far greater than not.
Yeah.
So,
how long were you in hospital, Diane, if you don't mind me asking?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. And if you hadn't have been there, the circumstances could have been very different, couldn't they?
Yeah, there's loads of factors that could have been different, really. I could have been further away. The crew could have been further away. I might not have been... I might have booked off for the day, and then you were reliant on the next nearest available resource to get to you. And minutes really do matter in these scenarios.
So how are you now, Diane? You've heard you've gone back to work. You've just said you're ripping out a bathroom. Are you feeling back to yourself?
Yeah, pretty much so. It's all thanks to Andy. Thanks to the ambulance crew that I am where I am.
Yeah, you are very lucky.
Yeah.
And Andy, have you always wanted to help people? How have you got into this
career? Yeah, so my background with all things medical is at the age of 6, I joined Central Ambulance as what's known as a badger back then, and I'm still part of Central Ambulance now. I'm a trained ambulance crew for them. In 2016, when I moved to the Preston area, a friend of mine was part of the first responder group for that area and suggested it might be something that I'd be looking to get involved with, which I did. And then since then, I've been responding in my free time for the ambulance service to emergencies within the community. So I've always been in a role where I've been like community facing. So I've worked in a school doing health and safety, and I was a Coast Guard for 15 years. So, I've got that background. I've always been that background of wanting to help and be supported to our communities, and it just seemed a natural thing to do, really. And obviously with the medical training that I had through St John, it was, the next step, really. And no job is the same, really. So you get that, you still get, I don't like to say it, but you get that buzz when you go to an incident. It challenges you, it makes you think, it keeps you fresh, because you have to learn as you go along. So the exposure to doing incidents gives you that learning experience, really. Keeps you.
How long have you been a community first responder within the fire service?
So within the last probably 8 months, our Deputy Chief Fire Officer was having a conversation around first responders and looking at what we could do as a service. And I expressed to him that I was already part of the first responder network, that I was trained. So we had a meeting, we had a get together. And he encouraged and empowered me to be able to sign on while I was at work, and just said, when you're out and about, please do respond to medical emergencies if you could be of an assistance. So it's because of that conversation that allowed me to be able to be booked on and available. And since then, we've progressed within the service and looking at more staff coming on board. So we've got a further four members of staff now that are just about to start training. And then they'll be able to book on and be available when they're out and about for work and respond again in the community and potentially help save lives. That's the goal, really.
Then what do you think about the fire service supporting the ambulance?
Absolutely brilliant. I can't fault what Andy's done. You know, I mean, if it hadn't been for him, I wouldn't be sat here today. Yeah. You know, what did you say?
No, and it's all right. Don't. It's a very emotional experience, and I can clearly see today that you're very grateful and will be for a long time for Andy's work.
Yeah,
we don't need to expand on that one anymore. I can see the emotion.
I just think they should. All fire services should have the likes of Andy present on shift, because this is what's saved my life.
Yeah.
And we're not trying to take roles away from people. You know, there's still that role out there for the ambulance service. We obviously can't do them extended skills that the ambulance clinicians can, but we can be that pair of hands that are there
support
straight away, putting on the chest, putting a defibrillator on. You know, our fire engines all have defibrillators and medical kits on them. So if we can utilise the equipment, the training that our staff undertake,
the thing is, though, you've also then got to appreciate if there's a fire service, like within Leyland, I live minutes away from the fire service, and Leyland's not a massive big place. So let's just say there was, I don't know, a big incident somewhere, you would be the vital person. If an ambulance couldn't attend before you could get there.
Yeah.
So your job is equally as important as the ambulance crew. You know, you work together as a team. That's why I'm sat here.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think the luxury of my role is because I'm not a firefighter, I'm not frontline staff, I'm a community fire safety practitioner. I go out into our communities, do home fire safety. It allows me to be able to be within our community, and you know, I'm not getting diverted off to fire calls. So if there is a medical call that's within, you know, a minute, as it was in this situation, then I can, you know, respond to that. I can always go back to what I'm doing. I can have that conversation with the people that I'm seeing and just say, look, I'm really sorry, there's a medical emergency I need to attend to. And progress towards that incident then. I'm not tied up at like a fire scene, and we're not delaying a fire resource getting somewhere. We've still got that separation, really.
Dan, what's the one piece of advice you'd like to give to the listeners about what you've been through?
Respect. Respect the fire guys. Respect the ambulance guys. They are doing an absolute amazing job.
And I think this is a part where I was speaking to Andy before the episode, that people think firefighters and the fire service just put out fires. And like you've discussed, we do a lot more than just going to a fire. Like, no 2 days are the same in this job.
No. It's so diverse now, the role of the fire service and what we do in our communities. And we are community focused, because ultimately that's the people that we're out there serving, and whether that's from a fire point of view that we're attending fire related incidents, or if we're just having that simple conversation with somebody when we're out and about and just giving them key fire safety messages, or even any safety messages that we're putting out there as an organisation, it's all about keeping Lancashire safe. So that's the goal, isn't it?
Is there one piece of advice you'd like to give the listeners today?
I'd say to people, don't be afraid to help. You know, if you see somebody in distress or that's having a medical episode, you know, do try and help. Pick up the phone, ask for the ambulance service. Their operators are really well trained. They will give you step-by-step advice of what to do. They won't leave you on your own to try and work out what to do next. They will give you that advice and support over the phone. But, you know, learn a life-saving skill. Learn CPR if you can, and you've got the opportunity to learn how to do CPR, even if it's just hands only, the compressions, then that skill can make that big difference. and people not being afraid, you can't make the situation any worse. If that person is in cardiac arrest and you start compressions, you're not making anything any worse because they're already in a worse position, and even more so if you don't do anything. So it's just having the confidence, really, of being able to do something like that.
Because those compressions until, say, the crews arrive can save someone's life.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because, you know, that early CPR is what helps, because what that does, it circulates the oxygenated blood around the body and it keeps that person viable for further ongoing treatment. So like defibrillating drug therapies and stuff like that, because that volume and blood pressure is being sustained by the compressions, and that's what ultimately helps save people's lives.
Thank you both for sharing your story today. Thank you, Diane, for coming in and sharing your amazing story. And again to you, Andy, it's a wonderful story to share.
I also just like to say before we go, I'm speaking with Andy and thanking Andy and the ambulance crew, which I absolutely love doing. We talked about trying to get defibs around Leyland area. I've been in touch with one or two of the shops, and we're looking into trying to get defibs, but I think there needs to be, and this is on speaking with Andy, that needs to be more defibs around the areas, which when, you know, like Andy said, if he was out, the first thing you need to know is where your nearest defib is and how you can go and access it. And without these defibs around the area, which we've not got in Leyland, I think there's one.
Yeah, there's a couple. There's Tesco, most of the supermarkets now have them. I know from where we're near, I think the Priory Club near us has one, but the few and far between. So, yeah, it's definitely worth people looking at that. It's probably worth having a look in your local communities of where your nearest defib is.
It's about education, because I'm not sure I'd know where mine are in St Anne's.
Yeah, normally they're in a yellow cabinet on the wall or a green, something like that. It's marked anyway. And most of them are key-coded access, so that you can't just take them out and go off with them. So if you ring the ambulance service, they will normally tell you where your nearest defibrillator is if you don't know, and they'll give you the code to be able to send somebody and get it out of the cabinet. So if you've got somebody available that can go and get it out of the cabinet, then great, send somebody straight away for it. But yeah, knowing where your local defib is massive. You know, if schools have now got them, most schools across the county have all got them, because that was a big change in the education system, that they made it a mandatory requirement to have a defibrillator in there.
Thank you for taking the time today to share your story. Anyone can save a life, and it can be a matter of minutes to learn these skills. It could make the difference between life and death for someone. If you're interested in becoming a community first responder, you can send your name and address to cfr.recruitment@nwas.nhs.uk to find out if NWAS are looking for volunteers in your community. The link will be in our podcast notes. And remember, if you liked our episode, please like and subscribe, and let's make Lancashire safer together.